The Catholic Channel Sirius XM 129 presents Just Love with your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, Executive Director of Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of New York.
Welcome to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about what's going on in the world from the perspective of our Catholic wisdom and our Catholic social thought. Just do it. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. If you want to learn more about what we're talking about here, you can check out my blog at justloveblog.com and follow me at Twitter at MSGRKSullivan. So we're going to talk this week about a couple of different topics. We're going to talk about the Fifth Encuentro, which is kind of the national meeting or gathering of Hispanic ministry in the United States. It's, as we said, it's the fifth one. We're going to talk with Richard Espinal about that. And then a little bit later on in the show, we're going to speak with Ian Morris, who is an undergraduate student at Hunter College. And we're delighted that both of them are going to be joining us here in the studio this week, because it's always fun when we have people here in the studio. But with Ian Morris, we're going to talk about his experience of going down to Puerto Rico as part of a contingent of City University and State University people, the Service Corps, to help rebuild Puerto Rico. And I was down there when they were there, and it was a very, very good experience to be down there. So we're going to speak with him about his experience that is there. Fanny, do you realize that the summer is more than half over?
Yes, and I'm very sad.
You're sad?
Yeah.
You like the summer?
I love the summer.
Why do you like the summer?
I just don't like coats, so that's why I don't like the winter.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
That's not bad. Well, you could move south.
I could. I would love to move south, but all of my family's up here.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you got to put up with coats.
I have to put up with coats and boots and everything else.
I like that. I think that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we should play. We should play at some point. We should play Bruce Springsteen's "Girls in Their Summer Clothes."
We should.
We should do that. We'll play that a little bit later
okay.
on. And is there a song about coats? I don't know. Is there a song about coats?
I would hate it.
You
honestly,
you would hate it. You know what I did see this past weekend? I saw the movie Mamma Mia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I saw it, and I didn't tell anybody I was going to go see it because, you know, for those of you who are in different parts of the country, we have some pretty, in my judgment, snobby film critics in New
yeah,
York.
Yeah, I agree.
And I knew that they were not going to like it. So mm-hmm. because it was, you know why?
Why?
It was too upbeat.
Yeah.
It was too happy.
Yeah.
It was too pleasant. It was too hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you didn't get depressed. And I think film critics, they love movies in which people are depressed.
Yeah. Dramas.
And dramas and like all this. And this was just so upbeat. So mm-hmm. I went to see it. I thought it was an absolutely great movie. So
I'm going to go check it out.
Because I
didn't see it because all of the critics were bashing it so much.
Yeah, and I understand them bashing it, so they don't have to go see it.
Yeah,
but
I agree.
But they're making money off their bashing critiques.
I mean,
they're getting paid to do it. Now,
yeah.
I'm not saying it was the greatest movie in the whole world, but it was kind of nice. It was kind of upbeat. You saw people getting along. You saw people, you know, pleasant. So, I mean, that's not the worst thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, I saw that. And I thought it was a perfect summer movie. I thought it was just a lot of fun to do it. And you know, sometimes what I say is when we talk about the real serious topics that we do on Just Love here, every now and then you got to take a step back and realize that the world isn't as depressing as it is. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe if we find our song about girls in their summer clothes, we can print. Ah! You know, this could have been in Mamma Mia.
This is kind of
upbeat. It's not quite ABBA, but you know,
it has that vibe.
It has that vibe. You know, Bruce can cover ABBA.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, not a bad thing. Okay, I think that's good. So, even though we're getting a little depressed because summer's passing away, but we can kind of keep the feel of summer too. I think it was great. So I did one other summer thing.
What did you do?
So I had two masses last week. Mm-hmm. So I had the 9 o'clock mass, the 11 o'clock mass, and the church where I'm at. And it was a really nice day. It wasn't bright sun, it was a nice day. So in between, I checked and there were still some tickets left for the Yankee game.
Oh, nice.
So I went to the Yankee game on Sunday afternoon and just sat there. And it was just great. And you know what was really great about it? The Yankees won.
Now, right.
That was really made it great. But the other thing was so many families were there. I really liked the fact that, and there was really, really munchkins who were there. And mm-hmm. I really kind of, even though I got a little annoyed sometimes when their carriages hit me and stuff like that, but it was really nice that parents were taking their youngest kids to the game. Mm-hmm. And kind of it was a family, you know, it was a family outing, and that they were taking the Yankee game and kind of, you know, passing on to them early in life. It was good parenting.
Yeah.
That they were becoming
Yankee
that they were
fans.
Becoming Yankee fans.
Yeah, I agree.
Yankee fans too. But you know, there were a couple of things which I thought about it. One is though, boy, you know, the price of tickets has just gone up so that it really is, it's expensive to take a family mm-hmm. to the game. I mean, boy, I was sitting up in the nosebleeds, which I love.
Yeah, same.
Behind, you say, but they were not cheap. I mean, I'm old and decrepit. So I remember when tickets were, you know, you could go for $5, $10 for a game. But now you can't do that. You can't do that at all. But
yeah, we used to get tickets for $11 when I was in grammar school.
Yeah, and so that was kind of good, but no more. You can't do that.
$11, you can sit in the parking lot.
That's right. Well, actually, you can take the subway back and forth, and you can look in from over there, and you can watch on your iPhone.
Yeah,
that's what you can do. But it was good. I liked that all the kids were there. And the other issue is incredibly diverse.
Yeah.
I mean, there were people from every continent that were there, although didn't see a penguin, so nobody from from Antarctica, but there were people, you know, from Europe there. Actually, on the subway, one of the people getting on, I got on a Grand Central station, mm-hmm. which is in the center of Manhattan, and there was somebody from, you know, the place where they speak that funny English. You know, it's like
that place.
Yeah, the place we beat in the war, and we're no longer a colony.
Who knows what their name is?
Yeah, we don't, you know, but they speak funny.
Yeah,
but they were going. They were going to the Yankee game,
nice.
And there were people there from Asia. There were people there from South America, from all over the place. So and a few New Yorkers were there too.
Yeah.
So it was it was kind of good. So I thought that was. So I kind of had my summer weekend. So I think that's
nice. Yeah, the ballpark is always good.
The ballpark is great, and when the Yankees win, it's even. And you know what I also saw, which was great. The first two runs that the Yankees scored was a guy who hit a home run, mm-hmm. and he hit it off the pole in right field.
Nice.
Now the thing that was really really funny about that, and Richard, you may remember this. There was an old Yankee broadcaster who, when he talked about the poles on each side, and the reason I'm saying that is everybody in the whole world, what do they call them? What do they call them, Richard? Kind of the poles at the end.
What do they call the?
The pole. Come on. What kind of pole?
It's the foul pole.
Exactly. except this broadcaster, uh-huh. dead number of years, Red Barber, who was a Yankee broadcaster, he always called it the fair pole.
the fair pole.
And he was right, because if it hits the pole, Jake, if it hits the pole, it's not foul, but it's fair.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, if it hits the pole, it's a fair ball, it's a home run. And so Red Barber always say, we misnamed it. It's not the foul pole, it's the fair pole. And so he always used to refer to it as the fair pole. And so the first home run was off the fair pole down in right field. And so the Yankees went ahead 2-0, and they never got behind again. So, and, you know, once they get ahead by 2-0, they, what do they have now? What do they got? They got about 17 different relief pitches now that they just keep buying and buying and buying. So, I mean, you know, but they brought in their relief pitches, and in two innings, I think it was the first pitch, the guy hit a home run.
Oh, my God.
Nice. You know? Now, they didn't catch up, but I mean, that's not the way to, you know, that's not the way to begin as a relief pitcher.
Yeah. Right.
You're supposed to get them out that's there. But anyway, so that was my week. Okay, let's go. Let's go to Richard Espinal, who is the Associate Director for Parish and Community Engagement. And we're going to speak to him about the fifth in Cointreau. So, Richard, thanks for being with us on Just Love today, and thanks for coming into the studio. So what's this fifth in Cointreau about? What is it about?
So the fifth in Cointreau is about gathering Hispanic leaders and our bishops from across the country to really think about how does the church in the United States better respond to the pastoral needs of the Hispanic community, as well as addressing some of the larger issues that impact Hispanics from across the country, whether they be newly arrived immigrants or second or third generation Latinos in the country.
So, you know, what about some of us kind of cynical New Yorkers who kind of say, oh, God, another meeting. Here they go again. They're talking about this. Is anything going to happen with regard to it? What do you say to that, Richard?
Well, I totally understand the cynicism, and I share it in a lot of ways, but I think what's been really great about the Encuentro process is, one, that it's not just a singular meeting, but this national Encuentro is kind of the culminating event.
So instead of one meeting that doesn't do anything, we now have a series of meetings that don't do anything?
We have a long line of meetings.
Okay.
Right. But what is interesting is that because this has been a multi-year process is that... starting at the parish level, what we've seen already is that in local parishes, these meetings, these gatherings have led to some form of transformation. And then hopefully at the diocesan or regional level, there'll be some more transformation that happens. That's not guaranteed, but definitely at the parish, we've seen some changes.
So, Fanny, do you know about this Encuentro thing?
I do, yes.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think about it?
I think that, you know, the Hispanic community is, especially in Jersey, where I'm from, we're very involved in our parishes, but we don't necessarily know that there's a bigger world out there, a bigger world of Hispanics in the Catholic Church. So I think it's good.
So how come if you're from New Jersey, you go to parish in New York?
because
you want to know there's a bigger world out there than New Jersey?
I think so. Like, I want to be connected not to just people in Jersey, but... You know, a lot of...
Are you abandoning your Jersey?
No. Okay.
She's
don't
heeding
let them
the call to be a missionary
exactly.
disciple.
That's... Thank you, Richard. Thank you for defending me.
And it's also New Jersey, so...
Exactly. No, but they... I mean, in Jersey, we do have, you know, well-established youth groups. Our parish has a youth group also, and they're pretty good. The work in the Bronx is a little different. We have retreats every month for youth who basically know nothing of God, so... and you know what's cool about the retreat center in the Bronx is that people come from all over the place. So Jersey comes too, you know. It's not just the Bronx. Yeah, we let them in.
So Richard, tell us kind of, and I confess, I went to the first Encuentro, which was like 4 million years ago before all you guys were born, which I believe was in Washington D.C. sometime. Probably, I want to say, in the 80s, maybe around 1985 or something like that. I don't remember exactly when it was. And I know I make fun of all these meetings, mm-hmm. whether they're locally or whatever. But I recognize that they do have an important value, and we need to kind of participate and take them seriously. But Richard, so this fifth Encuentro that's coming up, and we've had some regional meetings, what do you see as kind of a focus? What are some of the things that is important for us to address in this day and age?
Sure. So I think that this fifth Encuentro is really important on several levels. The first being is that I think for the first time, the church is recognizing that there, the church in the United States is in the midst of a transformation in the sense, just demographics, right? That if it doesn't address the needs and hear the voices of the Hispanic community, the church in the United States is really going to be in trouble, because all the statistics show that the Catholic Church is becoming more and more Hispanic, right? So you have something like 50% of Catholics, all Catholics in the United States under 30 are Hispanic. So this is an important part in just recognizing this moment of transformation. But the other thing is that we're also talking about a community that has very serious needs, right? And so whether it's regarding around immigration, whether it's around unemployment issues, whether it's about educational opportunities, the need for leadership formation. So there's a variety of issues that the church in general needs to work on and address, and hearing from the Hispanic community is particularly important, as well as making sure that within that community, there are leaders who can kind of lead the charge on some of this.
So, okay, I hear what you're saying, but let me play the devil's advocate for a minute. But Hispanics never go to church. why should the church pay attention to them? Because they never show up at church.
Well, I would disagree with that one. because I know the pews are full where I go to church. But I think that one thing that is true is that the Hispanic community in general, when it comes in terms of Hispanic Catholics, is parishes are important, but we also live our spirituality in our day-to-day. It's a very incarnational spirituality. And so you do have a significant number of Hispanic Catholics who are not necessarily going to Mass every week. Part of that is out of, you know, they just can't because they're working on the weekends, or they have families that they have to take care of, or because they live in an area where they don't have Mass in Spanish, or that really kind of speaks to their way of worship, which is, again, part of why this Encuentro process is important, because we need to hear that from people so that the church can better respond. But definitely the Hispanic community is moving the church forward.
So again, and I want to continue on that point. I mean, the reality is, which we have to admit as the Catholic Church, is not just Hispanics. I mean, right now, I think the estimate is that 1 in 4 Catholics attend Mass on Sunday. You know, that probably about 25% of Catholics do it. I got to believe that the number is not much better among Hispanics. Maybe it's worse. I don't know what it is. But we got a situation in the country where, you know, only a quarter are doing what we say. Let's not talk about sin, hell, mortal sin, all of that. But we basically say the Eucharist is that which gives us our identity. It's where we express our bond with Jesus, receiving Holy Communion, and it's where we express our bond with one another. And we got 75% of Catholics who ain't doing it. And so when it comes to, let's say, the Hispanic community, because we're talking about that, what do we do about that?
Right. So I think that one of the things is, part is there's a need for formation, right? There's this idea that is so central to our faith is not always communicated, I think, effectively, not just to Hispanics, but to all people, where people feel like, you know, they can kind of live their faith however they want, you know, or they can kind of pick and choose the way they live out their Catholic faith. So obviously there's a need for formation, and you need to target that, particularly among the Hispanic community, because we want to make sure that we don't lose the focus on the Eucharist and in the real presence of Jesus. And so we need to make sure that as a church, that we are equipping people to be the missionary disciples that we need to go out and bring their neighbors to church, or really bring them back to church. And that's something that we need to focus on.
So how do we do it?
So I think, you know, a lot of that is trusting people to be able to do that, to engage people, to allow them to feel and not just, you know, in a superficial way, that their voices matter and that they're being heard. And so I think that once we start doing that, people will want to be engaged. There's an expression that says that, you know, believing doesn't lead to belonging. Belonging leads to believing, right? And if people feel like they belong to that parish community, they'll want to then deepen their relationship with Jesus, and then that will kind of give them that impulse to go out and bring more people to Jesus.
So, again, I think, here's my own bias, so you get my own bias on this. My own bias on this is Hispanics are so part of the United States these days that when we talk about what's going on in the United States, when we talk about what's going on in the Catholic Church, we're talking about Hispanics, even if we don't like focus on Hispanics. So some of the questions I'm asking are questions that I would just ask about everybody. But since we're talking about the Fifth Encuentro, sure, and that, I'm focusing it this way. But how do we deal with the fact that if belonging leads to believing, that everybody now is infatuated with their mobile devices, with their isolating games, and that we don't need community anymore? We don't need to belong because I belong to my mobile device, and my mobile device is what gives me identity. How does that play itself out in the Hispanic community?
Well, I think one of the things that is really special about the Hispanic community, and I mean, I'm going to highlight it because it's my own community, is that kind of deeply ingrained in the culture is this sense of community, right? Right. It's the sense of family. I was just at a family event this weekend, and my cousins and I were laughing at the number of people who were there who technically aren't family anymore, but still feel like they can come to the family parties.
Right, right.
And so, you know, it's like, didn't they split up? And we're like, all right. Okay, they came to dance. That's fine. But I think that this is what's important about the Encuentro, is that there are gifts in the Hispanic culture that can really address some of these concerns, right? And so if we use this Hispanic sense of community, right, it can really deepen the entire church. It can really strengthen and be a gift for the entire church. Now, Monsignor, you speak Spanish, right? And so you know that in Spanish, there are two words that we typically use to say welcome, right? So first is bienvenido, right? Which is a literal translation of welcome.
Right.
But then we also talk about acoger, right? Un espíritu de acoja, right? And acoger is a more active form of welcoming. So it's not just, hey, come on in. It's let me come and get you.
So in other words, if I were doing this in English, bienvenido is I shake your hand. Acoger is I give you a hug.
Well, and even more than that is that I go get you. I come to you and bring you in.
Yeah, so we call that kidnapping.
Well, we have some of that too. Any which way, okay. Right? Whatever works.
Okay, no, I got it. And I think that, you know, and it's interesting. So let me pursue this a little bit, because how do you deal with the fact, as one of those gringos, that we got a church which is kind of, can be a little bit, I don't want to say aloof, but it's kind of a little bit staid, you know? How do we kind of make that shift to do that acohering? Oh, wait, let me show you. Acogiendo.
Oh, what is it?
There you go.
Wow. No, I think you're right that there is a need to kind of have this translate to other communities, because I think the reality is that we in many of our parishes throughout the country, it's a shared environment,
right?
And so how do we break some of the divisions that exist in our local communities? And I think part of that is just hoping that and working towards everyone recognizing each and every other person first as a child of God, right? Pope Francis spoke about that we're living in this culture of the adjective, and that we see the label before we see that the real truth of that person, which is that first and foremost, that person is a child of God. And so I think that kind of spirit, that kind of thinking will allow some of those barriers to break down, so that way everyone can feel like they're part of this community.
So let me translate that into another, which is absolutely applicable, is, I mean, right now we are in the era of what they call identity politics. Do you know what that is, Fanny?
Identity? I don't. Can you explain it?
I can. You vote because you're Dominican.
Okay.
Not because you like necessarily the person's political positions.
Right. Okay.
So I identify, I vote for a gay candidate because I'm gay.
Right.
I vote for a Catholic candidate because I'm Catholic. I vote. Mm-hmm. It's like I identify, you know, with that. And I think that that's, you know, part of the challenge that we face because, you know, as we believe, everybody's made in God, the image and likeness of God. But we now live in a world in which we do have a lot of identity, you know, politics. I mean, sure. I remember somebody who was a very, very good friend. She passed away a while ago. And she was Puerto Rican. And she didn't want any other bishops who weren't Puerto Rican. You know, she didn't want Hispanic bishops who weren't Puerto Rican. You know, it was like, you know, because that was her identity and that right. was the way she saw things. So, Richard, let me move you to one additional topic right now, because there are actually two topics I want to talk about. But one of the topics I want to talk about is how does some of this translate in the work that I know is very dear to your heart? Is how do we get from the church to the community? How do we get from the church to working for the betterment of the community? How do we work on issues of justice in with the Hispanic community who is such an important part of the church? How do we make that movement?
Sure. So I think that the idea of leadership development is incredibly important, that this work of whether it's empowering communities or addressing social needs, that it's not just the job of, let's say, a Catholic Charities. It's not just, you know, the job of the pastor or of any specific ministers, but really that it becomes something that everyone sees that they have a responsibility to address, that they have to work together.
But are there, I mean, that's absolutely true. But are there particular characteristics of the Hispanic population that make that either harder or make it easier or provide opportunities or obstacles?
Sure. So, I mean, in the sense of obstacles, what we see in a lot of our communities is just the reality that many of our own members are the ones who need the most help, right? And so they are the ones who are dealing with immigration issues in terms of whether they're at risk. They are the ones who maybe are living in the shadows, who feel marginalized, who, because of language barriers, don't feel like they can access the various services and resources that are available to them. They are the ones who, you know, because of necessity, are working two jobs, three jobs. You know, they're basically living in shifts. You know, depending on where they are, transportation is an obstacle. So there's a lot of things within the Hispanic community that we're dealing with. And so when you're kind of the person who feels like you're powerless because of your situation, it's about transforming some of that thinking, as well as finding allies, right? And finding people who are willing to step up and take on those challenges and work alongside people in the community.
You going to the fifth Encuentro?
I am.
Okay. So when you come back, we're going to talk more about it. And wonderful. We're going to see what a valuable, vibrant, transformative meeting it was. See? I know the right words. I can say that. That is good. Let's take a break. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. Our world will be more just and more compassionate. We'll be back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
now, let's get back to Just Love and your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Hey, welcome back to Just Love. If you want to follow me on Twitter at MSGRKSullivan. And if you want to check out my blog, justloveblog.com. And here we are in the middle of summer, and we're kind of letting the summer days go past. We just had a conversation about the fifth Encuentro, and in a few moments, we're going to speak about a trip to Puerto Rico, a service trip, with Ian Morris, who is a student at Hunter College and part of the CUNY and the SUNY service corps. So I'm delighted that he'll be in the studio with us, and we'll talk with him a few moments. Hey, you know, Fanny, they sometimes kind of pick on athletes for making a lot of money and not doing much. Yep. And but we got a little bit of a good news story about LeBron James, right?
Yeah.
What's going on?
So he's...
Is he, by the way, is he staying with Cleveland or is he moving? What's going on?
Is he? I'm not a basketball fan.
Anybody know, Jake? Is he staying with Cleveland or is he moving?
I heard he's moving, but I don't follow it that close.
Okay.
I'm like 80% sure on this.
Okay. All right. I think that's what I hear. He got a little fed up because he didn't win again and is moving on. But anyway. So anyway, let's not get distracted. Maybe I'll ask Ian. Ian may know when he comes in. We'll see if he knows. But anyway, Fanny, what's he doing good?
So he's, I mean... A lot of people don't like LeBron, but he's a big, he does a lot of donations and charity work and things like that. I think in the past year, he's donated $4 million to charity. But recently, he opened up a public school for at-risk youth in Ohio, third and fourth grade. And so the school it's called the I Promise School, and it's part of the Akron Public Schools in Ohio. It has 43 academic staffers, a principal, assistant principal, four intervention specialists, a tutor, English as a second language teacher, a music instructor, gym teacher. So the reason why he basically launched this school was because he grew up in the streets of Ohio and he didn't want these kids to go through the same thing he did, with gang violence, gun violence, and all of these things. So he wanted to give back to the community he grew up in so that these kids don't go through the same thing.
Good idea, and glad he's doing it, I think. And we encourage athletes to be generous and, you know, and I don't think we should look down on it. I mean, again, you know, when you look at how much money they have, that he's doing something good is really a positive thing. And, you know, in the business that I'm in, you always want people to do more. Hopefully he does more. Hopefully this is successful and it gives inspiration to other things going on. Hey, but I think there's something that really bad going on. And tell me about this. Aren't they now those 3D printers? They can even make guns. So what's going on there?
Yeah, so I mean, this story I think is fascinating because it's such a bad idea. So 3D printing has been very popular the last 5 to 10 years. So the background of the story is that a few years ago, a young anarchist made blueprints so people can use 3D printers to make guns. And then the State Department shut it down and he sued for violating of freedom of speech and gun rights. So last month, his company settled with the Trump administration and they agreed that the blueprints can finally go back online tomorrow or this week. They celebrated the win, I guess, if a quote unquote, if you can call that a win. But critics and a lot of people are, you know, they're backlashing on this because people say that this can create more terrorists, felons, domestic abusers to create these guns and use it in very, very bad ways. And because of the things that we've seen this past year with gun violence in schools and even in movie theaters a few years back, a lot of people are very scared at this point that these printers are being allowed to create these guns.
I'm sorry. This is crazy.
Yeah.
This is absolutely crazy. That, yeah. that and like There are no serial numbers, I'm told. There's no serial numbers. Nothing.
They're plastic also, so you can't detect them on metal detectors.
You know, sometimes we just got to say, wait a minute. This is just a little bit of a crazy, crazy idea. So that's crazy. But, you know, there's another issue, Fanny, that was in the news this week, too. Another issue about kind of a relationship between kind of what people eat. And we always thought about the relationship between what people eat and their physical health.
Right.
But didn't they do a study or something, found out there's a relationship between what people eat and mental health?
Yes. So I was actually having this conversation with my sister a few days ago because she does suffer from anxiety. So yesterday we were talking about a holistic approach to mental health and nutrition and things like that. So according to the Anxiety and Depression Association of America, anxiety disorders are the most common form of mental illness in the U.S., affecting 18% of the population. Next month, the World Journal of Psychiatry will publish antidepressant foods and evidence-based nutrients profiling systems for depression by Dr. Drew Ramsey of Columbia University and Dr. Lauren LeChance for the Center of Addiction and Mental Health in Toronto. So the journal basically includes a nutrient profile scale, which identifies the most nutrient-dense foods in relation to the prevention and treatment of depressive disorders.
So what are some of the good things we're supposed to eat?
So some of the good things. So foods richest in these things include clams, mussels, oysters, leafy greens such as kale and spinach, wild salmon, meats, nuts, beans, and seeds.
Okay.
So, good food. I mean, I don't really like kale, so I don't know, but the rest of it is really good.
Kale is good, depending on what dressing you put
on it.
Yeah,
you're right.
You can mask it.
Yeah, you can mask it.
And you can pretend
it's very strong.
Yeah, you can pretend it's lettuce.
Yeah.
If you kind of, you know, if you put a lot of dressing on it, you pretend it's kale.
Yeah.
But I know, I always feel less anxious when I have pizza.
Me too. And so, it's not on here. It's
not
listed.
I know. I don't know. We
or
gotta,
pasta.
Yeah. And what about chocolate cake?
No, it's not on here.
I don't know.
You know what? Maybe we should just read the journal when it comes out next month.
All right. Maybe we should. And maybe we got to, maybe we'll see. Maybe we'll have one of those smart guys or smart women on the show.
Yes, I think that's a good idea.
And we got to talk about chocolate cake, pizza, ice cream. They all reduce
pasta,
my anxiety. Yeah, they
Mexican
reduce
food.
They reduce my anxiety. I don't know. Anyway, let's take a break because I want to get to Ian Morris, who's an undergraduate at Hunter College, in the next part. So listen, just do it. Love God, love your neighbor, love yourself. Our world will be more just. It'll be more compassionate. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is Just Love. We'll be back in a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Just do it. Just love. Just check out Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, who's here right now. Take it away, Monsignor.
Remember those walls I built? Well, baby, they're tumbling down.
Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Check out my blog, justloveblog.com. Follow me on Twitter, MSGRK Sullivan. I'm delighted that we have in the studio here Ian Morris, who is a student at Hunter College from Queens Village in New York, who just got back a week or so ago from a mission to Puerto Rico as part of the City University of New York Service Corps. Ian, thanks so much for coming into the studio.
Thank you, and good morning, Monsignor. How are you doing?
Good, I'm doing great. So, hey, didn't you have better things to do this summer than to hang out in Puerto Rico for 2 weeks? Tell me about what this Service Corps stuff is all about.
Well, actually, there were many things I could have done this summer, but that was the better thing that I chose to do. And the Service Corps is a program that was created by CUNY. And through different fundraising methods and donations, they actually had the ability to send a group of students to Puerto Rico to help in the relief effort, rebuilding roofs and just working with the community and helping them build and recover from the hurricane.
So when were you down there?
I was down there for 2 weeks from July 8th to July 21st.
See, I went down on the 23rd and the 24th with a delegation from led by Governor Cuomo and a few others. So Ian, you left when I was coming, right?
Yes, I left right before you came.
So you wanted to avoid me because I was I was down there.
Sure, you can say that.
Okay. So anyway, so tell our listeners what it was like. What did you go down there to do?
It was incredible, honestly. While I was down there working on roofs in Barranquitas, Puerto Rico,
I went to Barranquitas too.
Yes, there were so many people. The community there was amazing. The people were so close together and connected, mm-hmm. but they welcomed us into their homes without any hesitation.
So, Ian, let me just interject for our listeners. The island of Puerto Rico is not huge, 3.4 million people. It's, I don't know how big it is, whether it's, you know, the size of Tennessee. I don't know how big it is, but it's not huge. You can drive across it in a few hours. It's not big in north, south also. But one of the other factors is you have the big city of San Juan, and then you have the places that are in the interior up in the mountains. Now, Barranquitas, where Ian went, and I also went there, that's up in the mountains.
Yes.
And that's a little bit different than San Juan, isn't it?
It's extremely different. The language spoken there is a little bit different. The type of people who you interact with on a daily basis. And even when you go out into the city there is completely different from the larger city that's in San Juan.
Did you actually stay in Barranquitas?
Yes, I stayed in Barranquitas. I stayed up in the mountainous region up on a hill. But on weekends, we traveled down to the city and you actually got to see the local city center and city square.
So actually they told me that there was a restaurant or a bar there where people could watch the World Cup. Did you get to see some of the World Cup?
Yes, and lots of baseball.
lots of baseball. So tell me the physical work that you actually did when you were there.
The physical work included lifting wood, lifting metal, using power tools, and climbing and getting up on roofs, and basically you have to assess the different aspects that are damaged or what needs to be repaired or replaced, and then you have to go and communicate with your team and get it done.
Now, had you ever done any construction work before this?
Not at all.
Really? Really? Did you like it?
I loved it. It was really intense. You know, at the end of the day, you were tired, but the work that you were doing was so meaningful and impactful that you didn't even worry about the stress or the pains.
Yeah, so did you come back with new muscles?
I think so. I think I'm ready for the beach.
So what, you know, again, now as part of this, they kind of made this a pretty good experience because aren't you supposed to, you're going to get some credits for this, aren't you?
Yes, they actually had us writing and journaling while we were in Puerto Rico, and we're going to receive college credits for not only the work that we did, but for the academic component.
So share with our listeners, actually we're speaking with Ian Morris, who is a student at Hunter College, and this summer he was part of the CUNY Service Corps, which were cohorts of students, both from City University and State University of New York, that went down to Puerto Rico to help the ongoing rebuilding effort. And so Ian joins us here in the studio. So, you know, you did journal, and I think they encouraged you to be a little bit reflective of the experience, not meaning to say, I hammered this nail, I did that. So share with our listeners, what were some of the reflections that you had based upon your experience there?
The most impactful one that sticks out in my head would be, I think it was about the fifth day in Puerto Rico. The family whose home I was working on, they actually made us breakfast and then lunch while we were there. And Barranquitas isn't a very wealthy community in Puerto Rico. So the fact that we were there working on their roofs for free and they still wanted to contribute to help us keep our energy up and just to show their gratitude. It was really amazing.
Oh, that's a wonderful, wonderful kind of story. And isn't that kind of, you know, an experience that sometimes we have, that there can be a generosity of heart and a generosity of spirit that isn't always, you know, related to the amount of stuff that we have. Now, I mean, we talked a little bit earlier in the show about the generosity of LeBron James, who is giving a lot of money to help this school, but he's got a lot of money.
Yes.
You know, but as you say, oftentimes those people who have very, very little, they want to give a little bit of what they have to share, to show their appreciation. So that's a really good good story. Any other reflections that you had?
Also, just a comment. I noticed the overall resilience of the island because they were last year not only hit with one but two back-to-back hurricanes. And in Barranquitas, whenever there was a rainstorm, there would be threat of power going out, water going out, loss of phone service and communications. But the people weren't scared because they knew they had each other. They had strong organizations in place, like the organization that partnered with CUNY, All Hands and Hearts,
right,
and other nonprofit organizations that were there to have their back.
So, you know, Ian, that's a good thing that you say, because I think the couple of times I've been down, that the notice of resilience was a part of what was there. The one thing, though, somebody shared with me, a little bit scary a little bit, was that given the fact that we're getting into the hurricane season right now, is even though there's resilience, there may be a little bit of kind of mental and emotional stress that people get really upset because they just don't know if when the thunder comes, if it's going to mean another storm. So the resilience is coupled with a little bit of anxiety about what's going on. Did you pick any of that up?
Yeah, definitely. On the from the time that I was there, there were, I think, two hurricane warnings. And in the days before, you would see it kind of gets quiet after a certain time, even in the middle of the day. There's just this thin layer, this thin veil of anxiety in the air. But so overall, I feel the resilience stronger than the anxiety.
Well, I think that's good. And I think it does show, which is a little bit of a challenge that we have about how resilient the human spirit is. But that doesn't give us an excuse to try to force the human spirit to be resilient by allowing bad situations to exist. It just means that even when they do exist, there's the possibility for people to come back and to do, you know, to recoup their lives. Was there anything when you went down there that was surprising? Did there anything that you kind of was beyond your expectations?
Not beyond my expectations, but while we were going down there, the CUNY students, everyone in my cohort four, we were down there to help out in any way that we could. So we weren't expecting the most lavish conditions, but right. There were these outdoor showers with freezing cold water. But, you know, after a long day of work, it didn't matter where the showers were, what conditions it was, because you felt good on the inside. So Everything right. else was you can deal with all of the hardships and things like that.
Yeah, so you had to take a cold shower, not a warm shower. Yeah.
Cold showers at night outside, but
not so. So with the other people in your group, how many went down with you?
There were about 14.
Okay. And were you all 14 of you in Barranquitas, or did you split up?
Yes, all 14 of us were in Barranquitas for the duration of.
So were they were the 14 of you, did you know each other before you went down, or was this kind of a put together group?
We had two intake meetings before we took the plane to Puerto Rico, but other than that, we all met each other for the first time.
So what was your impression, without necessarily mentioning names, what was your impression of the people in your cohort?
Very diverse. Everyone came from different backgrounds, different parts of New York City. We had representation from all five boroughs, I believe. Multiple CUNY schools in the city, in the outer boroughs. So definitely the diversity.
And was there also a diversity of genders and ethnicities and races and languages?
As well as ages.
Really? Really? Yes. What was the oldest?
I think in the 30s.
Okay. And
so everyone was welcome. You know, everyone was willing to participate and contribute.
So I was up on the roof in one of the places, and it was intriguing to me that I saw people who were part of that cohort that were on that roof. There were Asians, there were Hispanics, there were Afro-Americans, there were people from a variety of different places, men, women. I would say most of those were probably your traditional college-age students, but there were other people who were volunteering too. So it was... So are you glad you did it?
If I could go back, I'd definitely go back again, and I'd try to stay for longer. I tried my best, but it didn't end up working out.
Well, you know what I'm told, and again, I think for our listeners, this is very, very, very important to know. I believe, and Ian, if you know better than me, please correct me, that there may have been spots for like about 400 students, because they went in 2 week cycles, and I think there may be four or six of those cycles. I'm not sure, but I think there may have been like room for 400 or something like that. But they had over 2,000 students who volunteered to to go down there for those 2 weeks. And I think initially they may have thought that they were going to go down for longer. But in order to give everybody a chance, they kind of made you come back after 2 weeks.
Exactly. But I'm not upset, because I know that, I got to contribute for 2 weeks, and that there are many other CUNY students who are going to come after me and continue the work that I started.
You know, when we were down there, I think the governor indicated that he was going to try to make it permanent, that they were going to continue this service corps so that there would be the opportunity to do things over time. And which would you recommend, that these type of projects continue?
Without a doubt, I would throw in all the support I can give behind similar projects in the future, because they're needed, especially when you have people who are willing to give up their time, go away from their families, their loved ones, to help and volunteer and make a difference. I feel like you should give them whatever tools necessary to contribute.
Ian Morris, thank you so much for being with us on Just Love. But thank you for giving you 2 weeks to go down to Puerto Rico, to being part of that and sharing your reflections. Thank you so much for doing that. You know, Fanny, what I think we kind of learned today is, so whether it be a rich guy like LeBron James, mm-hmm. whether it be a student at Hunter College in CUNY, or whether it be a family that has undergone a great deal of hardship in their own homes, that all of us in our own situations, we can give to others, and it's not, I once heard a phrase, which I thought was a phrase I've kept with me, if I can remember it now, that we live in a world in which no one should be so poor that they don't have something to give, and that no one should be so rich that they have nothing to receive. And I think that's a little bit what we talk about in Just Love. Just love. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and more compassionate. Hey, in the middle of summer, thanks for being with us on Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.